Cool. All right. So,
Could you do the okay there and minimize
yeah,
that with that mouse?
yeah. Okay. Okay.
Sure.
This.
And alt.
I just pressed Alt and try it again. Alt. Okay. Uh-oh, if I move the mouse, then it undoes the Alt. So sensitive. No. Okay.
Should I start?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So hello everyone. I'm Arnav. So well, the broad theme of my research for the last few years has been trying to understand how language models do factual associations. Basically, I want to understand how language models, like what facts about the real world these language models know, where it stores this knowledge in the parameters, and how the information flows through the network during inference. And with this understanding, how can we update this knowledge in the language model? But okay, today's research talk is gonna be it's gonna be very different, actually. Yeah, it has really nothing to do with what I usually do. So some of you know that I've been doing maths for the last few weeks, I think 5 or 6 weeks. I'm doing maths with Nilanda. And one of my reasons for getting into this program was I wanted to know more about sparse autoencoders. There has been a lot of excitement around it. Well, a lot of people seem to like this thing a lot, including Nilanda. If you just go to his Google Scholars, all of his recent works are based on sparse autoencoders. I just wanted to like learn from him, and yeah, and people he's actually collaborating with. So during the last 2 weeks of this program, you end up doing a research sprint. Well, interestingly, my research sprint had nothing to do with sparse autoencoders. I thought it was gonna do have most definitely have something to do with sparse autoencoders, but I ended up doing something completely different. So I can talk about that a little bit. And yeah, and maybe at the very last, I'll tie something back to what I usually do. And you might have seen that the title of this talk is just research update. I was trying to when I put I thought that I'll put everything in the slide and I'll find a title that will basically tie everything together. You might have guessed I was not really able to find one. But yeah, if you have any suggestions for me after this talk. Did I try ChatGPT? Actually, no. That might have been a good idea. Okay. So first, I'll talk a little bit about sparse autoencoders, some basic preliminaries, the overall idea, and some of my underbaked thoughts about that idea, and some questions I have, some experiments I did to investigate these questions, and yeah, we'll see. Okay. So I'll try to go over this slides a little bit quickly because everyone here or most of you here kind of already knows about them. So yeah, what is a feature? It's super hard to find a satisfying definition of a feature. So I stole this definition from the toy models of superposition, like the properties of input that neuron or direction responds to. With a slight modification, I added or output. Well, many of you attended when Lisa presented her work on AlphaZero. Well, sometimes you can find concepts about some strategy the model is going to apply sometime in the future. So it can also be something about the output. And I think this idea, it kind of like generalizes across all generative models as well. That was kind of the idea of feature lens, and also I think in diffusion model as well. The model is going to generate a car, so it has to have some concept in the latent. So there are some desirable properties of a feature. One is irreducible, basically something like a red circle. It should not be a feature in this with this property, because a red circle you can basically you can divide it in two different concepts. Like it is a circle, a shape, and a color is red. Another thing is interpretable. Basically, we humans understand what the model is looking at or looking for, or basically what it's trying to do. And okay, at the very last sentence, I was a little bit uneasy putting it there. Well, sometimes maybe we want uninterpretable features as well, specifically for the things humans are not traditionally very good at. Well, something like AlphaFold, like protein structure modeling is not something humans are very good at, but there is an effort in this lab to actually change that fact. Maybe you guys will find something super cool and interesting, and you'll then teach humans how to do protein structure modeling. That will be super cool. Okay. So here, I am drawing these concepts as single neurons or single channels in the embedding dimension. But life is always not that easy because of something called polysemanticity. Sometimes individual neurons, they activate or respond to completely different concepts. Here you see that in a single neuron is activating for different n-grams that really has nothing to do with each other, like research gate, prime factors, nanograms, Eurovision, stuff like that. So it's probably more reasonable to think of features as directions. And then you will see that, okay, the axis is here, you can think of like corresponding to one neuron. Basically, x-axis correspond to one neuron, y-axis correspond to another neuron. And if two features, they are represented by its orthogonal directions that really has nothing to do with each other, but they can still end up exciting the same neuron. There's another thing called superposition. The model learning more features or directions than it has dimensions of. Basically, it's a two-dimensional plane. It can only technically learn two directions, but it can start squeezing in more features, and these different features can also start interfering each other. But why the model can get away with this? Because of something called feature sparsity. Not all the features are present at a single data point. Like, think of an example, like how many times uranium and jazz appear together in a sentence, unless there is a jazz band called Uranium, which I am not really sure. Okay. And what this experiment is, basically, if you train a data with different level of feature sparsity, you will start seeing that the model can start learning more features than it has dimensions of. And also in very high dimensions, things actually start acting a little bit differently. It has more room for flexibility. You can do a very silly experiment, actually. You can start with a very fat matrix where individual columns are individual bases, and you can try to just make QTQ is equal to identity. And basically what it's supposed to do is that if the columns are different, then their dot product is zero, basically make them orthogonal. And you'll find that you can squeeze in a lot of columns, basically. You can probably start with a 1000 by 10,000 matrix, and you'll find that the different columns, if you do gradient descent to tune that, you'll find that probably after you're done tuning, the columns, the angle between the columns, they are roughly orthogonal, maybe between 88 to 92. This is the promise of sparse autoencoders. You break the representation into monosemantic and interpretable directions. Basically, there is an encoder here. Okay, you take one of the latents from the model's representation, you encode it into a higher projection, where and then you basically decode it back to reconstruct the original matrix. And you backpropagate two kinds of losses. One is the reconstruction loss and one is the sparsity loss. What the sparsity loss is supposed to achieve is that it's supposed to make most of these things zero, and only a few of these things are on. So basically what it's supposed to give you is that, okay, so the columns of the decoder matrix, think of them as bases of the representation, which is supposed to capture these individual concepts. And this is a mixture. This is kind of like a distribution, how this this latent is distributed across different features. And this mixture is supposed to mix all of these concepts together to give you back the representation. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So yeah, there has been a lot of different ways of getting the mixture. I think there is very little room for creativity in the decoder part. It has to be a down projection or something. But there are actually different ways of getting the mixture, and people have been innovative about the structure of the encoder, playing with the loss. These are just some of the figures, but if you just go to Google Scholars, you will find a lot of different ways of doing that. People have been doing, I think, top K something and ghost gradients. So there is a kind of like an engineering subfield in sparse autoencoders. And people have also been training this mixture of expert sparse autoencoders and training this router to refer back to decide basically which sparse autoencoder to refer back to now. And there has also been some proposals to try to encode a bottleneck interpretability bottleneck inside these transformers. And okay, why not then kind of like replace all the layers representations with this bottleneck, with this interpretability bottlenecks? Yeah, I think GemmaScope was kind of like an attempt at this.
One thing.
Yeah, sure.
If we can discuss a little bit this one.
Which one?
I mean, those two things.
These two things?
Yeah. Could you explain a little bit more?
Yeah, they really have nothing to do with each other, actually. So here, you'll take a latent, and you'll, instead of just training one sparse autoencoder, you'll train three different sparse autoencoders, or in kind of like a mixture of things.
Yeah.
And you'll train a router here. That will basically give you a decision which sparse autoencoder now you want to refer back to.
Okay.
Basically, which sparse autoencoder is best given this representation.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
Okay.
And then what's the benefit?
This is kind of like a mixture of experts' benefits, I guess.
So
well, here you are not really mixing the knowledge between experts. You are just trying to like, you're just trying to decide which is the best sparse autoencoder given this data set.
Okay.
That's it. And the right one is that you are basically trying to encode an interpretability bottleneck inside these transformers. Basically, the figure here is kind of literally the whole idea, to be honest, is a little bit different. You kind of like do another layer of fine tuning on top of these SAEs. Basically, you don't really get representation just from the reconstruction loss, but also like how it overall affects the model.
Okay, this is just normal language model.
This is normal language model.
Okay.
Yeah. And kind of like you introduce an interpretability bottleneck when you train when you do further fine tuning the model with SAEs,
mm-hmm.
and then you do that after all the modules, and eventually you kind of like end up replacing the model to a decompiled network.
Okay.
Yeah, it's something like a vision. I'm not really sure. I'll rephrase. I don't think GemmaScope was an attempt at this, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
GemmaScope was kind of the first step towards this, right?
Yeah, kind of the first step.
Two-step procedure. We want to try to find the features, the sparse features.
Yeah.
And then if we have two SAEs.
But JavaScript was also not trained like this, right? It was kind of like trained as like this normal SAE losses, right?
You're right.
So that's why I was kind of like changing what I just said. Yeah.
And are these like the final decompiled network available on Kubernetes?
No, it's just a vision paper.
It's a vision.
Yeah, it's like a, I think it came from Lee Sharkey, if I'm not wrong.
Oh, okay.
This is applicable to language models as well.
Yeah.
So the idea is to replace layers.
Yeah.
And we don't understand what an MLP is doing really,
yeah.
but we want to force the model to be in this
yeah.
fast autoencoder basis.
Yeah.
So we had an MLP before, but we train to reconstruct sparse autoencoder features from an earlier layer to a later layer, skipping the MLP.
Yeah.
And in the end, we have like a totally different network
yeah.
that's
yeah.
just composed
yes.
of these train sparse. Skip
yeah.
connections.
There was actually a paper at Neurips, which I reviewed, and which kind of did like that. They tried to replace the MLPs with autoencoders, and they mentioned some, they came up with some new architecture which they use to replace the MLPs. That was the high level idea, I think.
Did it work?
I think so. That's why I think I accepted it.
Okay.
I would need to check the details, but that's what I could recall. Yeah, but yeah.
Wait, what's the advantage of doing that over just training a full model? Like a really
the sparse stuff okay. is probably a lot more easily understood.
Like,
no, training is, I mean, training of like what
yeah.
they did
yeah.
in the Snarps paper, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like you read the toy models paper and you're like, what's actually going on is it's a simulation of this like giant sparse network.
Yeah, in this double descent Anthropic paper, I think they mentioned that they tried just like enforcing a sparsity penalty throughout network training.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work that well. But like training the full model to its like full performance. And then only afterwards trying to approximate is what they are trying to do now.
And you think it's just hard to optimize to the full model?
Yeah.
Yeah, one reason I can think of is that maybe when you're training these sparse autoencoders on top of something already trained, well, it kind of already knows the features, so it has a very strong prior, a very strong initialization. But I actually don't have a good answer to that. It's kind of, it should be equivalent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and yeah, people have been doing tons of work with sparse autoencoders, finding different features for entities, like directions for sycophantic phrases, harmful behaviors in language models. Yeah, but I honestly think that the most interesting paper, it actually came from this lab. Probably I'm a little bit biased. Well, some of you are were authors of that paper. Because this is, my reason is that this is one of the very few papers that actually tries to do something causal, that actually looks for causal evidences. Most of the papers I have seen, they kind of look for, okay, this, so this look for this kind of pattern, which can be correlated by this. Anyways, so this is the basic idea of sparse autoencoders. Let's kind of take a step back for a moment. So many of us are familiar with sparse autoencoders, not really sparse autoencoders, autoencoders from images, right? You take an image, you basically smash it down in a lower representation, and then you try to reconstruct it back, right? Okay, here in the text domain, what are you actually doing? So in the text domain, a text is comprised of a bunch of tokens. For each of the tokens, you have a representation. And what you are literally doing here is taking one of the columns of this representation and trying to do sparse autoencoder on top of that. Like, does that seem weird to anyone? Like, how does it even make sense? I mean, if anyone has any ideas, I have some ideas. But
weird in what sense?
What is the question?
Like, okay. So here in the image, I guess you have an eye, which is kind of like, this concept is kind of like spanned across multiple pixels, multiple columns. In textual domain, well, what about the features that appears for like a span of tokens?
But there is self-attention, right?
Not on sparse autoencoders.
No, but the activations are formed based on attention mechanism.
And you okay,
that, I think the idea is you hope that gets captured in the hidden state that you're trying to decompose.
I think that's a reasonable hope.
Right? Yeah.
Because things are moved one token at a time.
Yeah. Like maybe because it's autoregressive, it makes more sense than if it was just like
that number. That was kind of also my thinking as well. Well, in autoregressive language models, well, there is some incentive to capture concepts in a single token, especially if the model thinks that this concept is going to be useful multiple times in the future. Like you can think of it like something like a something analogous to some eager processing we do in bottom-up type of dynamic programming. But yeah, I mean, am I super convinced by this argument myself? Well, probably no. I don't really know. And also, this argument, it does not really, I'm not really sure if it generalizes to masked language models, but maybe people don't really care about masked language models because I think we have verified that autoregressive language model, it just works. It just works better. And also, yeah, I want to investigate these two questions. How good are these SAEs? Are they capturing the data characteristics instead of model characteristics? And do they reliably find monosemantic features? And there are some other questions I had, but I'll not really get into. Okay. Yeah. So first of all, we want to understand, does the SAEs captures data characteristics versus model characteristics? So I have this simple setup. Assume that you have two models, M1 and M2, and you have two data sets, DA and DB. You'll basically train four SAEs on every model and data set characteristics. And you'll try to measure how aligned those representations are. Here, each of the nodes, you can think of as like representing one of the learned representations. 1A is model one, an SAE trained on model one on data with data set A. And you can think of the length is is a proxy for how distant they are. Basically, the more aligned they are, the closer these nodes will be. And you want your SAEs to kind of look like this. If it is more aligned with the model, it should be like this. And if it is more aligned with the data set, it will be kind of look like this, but the data sets are kind of like aligned. Does that setup make sense? Okay. So I basically did that. I chose two models, the Llama 3.1 billion and the Olmo 1 billion. One of the reasons I chose these models is that they are, well, if you just look at their model cards, they are almost exactly the same. They have the same number of layers, same representation size, same number of attention heads and everything. These are my two data sets and this is my evaluation data sets. I save the SAE at different checkpoints. That's how I get the SAEs. And how do I measure the alignment between learned spaces? I collect a bunch of SAE latent mixtures. Basically, this is the SAE representation, the M thing I showed. Okay. For N documents, it is roughly N times RD. I build a kernel of cosine similarity of these representations, and then, sure.
Sorry, is D the SAE number of hidden dimensions? Because D is usually the original.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, D is the SAE number of hidden dimensions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, could you explain what is latent mixture?
Okay, so the latent mixture is basically this.
This vector.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a like the columns of the decoder matrix, they are called SAE latents. Okay.
Sorry, why are the columns called? Wouldn't it be better to call them like SAE basis or something? Because why would they be the latents? Because they're not
dependent on the similar. It's just something people chose to call them.
Okay.
Yeah. The way that I'm familiar with the literature is that you like call individual dimensions of the hidden vector latents, and then you'd call like the column of the decoder matrix corresponding to a latent the decoder vector.
Okay. Can I also add another thing to this question? Mm-hmm. If you call them bases, you kind of expect that they'll be orthogonal. But how you train the decoder matrix, at least there is no orthogonality constraint. I mean, you can think of the
sparse. I don't think you necessarily think that a basis has to be orthogonal.
But you'd expect you'd assume that they come up at most D.
Yeah.
At most D, linearly independent.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, and they might not be linearly independent.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. They're most definitely often not linearly independent.
I see.
Sorry for stopping you. I did not let you finish.
I feel like I already finished. When I hear like SAE latents,
yeah.
I always think of individual entries of the activation, the hidden activations.
Oh, not the latent directions.
No, these would be like the decoder vectors.
Well, okay.
But it's like some, yeah, they're closely related.
Okay. 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 Hmm. Okay. Okay, moving on. Once you have this kernel, I want to use an alignment metric to basically understand how these two kernels are similar to each other. What I ended up choosing is SVCCA. Basically, the idea is that given that two documents are mapped similarly or differently in the SAE latent space, I want to understand if they are learning the same decomposition of concepts for the same document. Does that make sense? Okay. So I'm choosing SVCCA, but there are different ways of getting that. I think there is one called CKA and MNN. I mean, we'll not get into that. Okay, this is just one of the techniques to do that.
Do you have like a high level, like what is SVCCA and how does it work? Like just from abroad?
I actually forgot about that. But yeah, but this basically what they literally do is that given two kernels, they're supposed to just give you a score, like how aligned these two kernels are.
Right, this is like, not the full form of the metric.
Like, I can add another thing. Think of them as quotient similarity, but for matrices.
Sure. Yeah, I just know the full form of this term. Singular vector, canonical correlation analysis. But I don't really know it. Yeah. I forgot about it.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I basically did that, and these are the results.
Sorry, the x-axis is training steps.
X-axis is checkpoint steps. Yeah, the training steps, and the y-axis is the alignment score. Again, the more aligned they are, the smaller the distance between the edges are. And you can see that, well, it seems like it is always more aligned with the model. It starts dipping a little bit, but as you increase the data set sizes, it starts getting more and more learning models representations. But the data set, it does not really improve. So
I'm sorry, I just have a couple questions about this. Sure. So is this... you're starting with pre-trained, right?
Yeah.
For both of them. And then this is...
You're starting with the pre-trained language model.
Yeah. And this is full fine-tuning or this is like LoRa?
This is just SAE. I'm just learning SAE.
But you trained it on Tiny Stories and on Wikipedia, right? The two models?
Just the SAE latents, yeah.
Oh, just the SAE. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Can you... I mean, I don't think it makes sense to do LoRa on SAEs.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait, sorry, I already forgot. Wait, so is lower better, and then also which sides or model.
So one stands for the first term stands for the model, and the second stands for the data set. Okay. Yeah, I'll stay a little bit on this slide. Okay. Yeah, because I was a little bit surprised with this experiment actually. So yeah. So these two are where the model is the same, but the data set is the different. And these two are where the model is different, but the data set is the same. Okay. And the higher score here means that the distance between them is actually lower. And the lower score between means that the edge between them is actually larger. So what I'm trying to say here is that the SAE is actually learning, or at least this experiment suggests, this setup suggests, is that the SAE is actually learning the model representations, which is nice, which is what we kind of want. And we also,
maybe you can complete that.
Yeah, and we also kind of see that it starts dipping a little bit. Well, it starts with random. So this is kind of like similar to the models cosine similarity is. It is similar to the cosine similarity learned in the models representation space. Okay, it starts dipping. So what I'm trying to say is that with initial steps, it starts learning, it starts to pick up like more spurious correlations in the data set. But as you train it longer, as that it starts picking up the model's representations. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Yeah, and why I told that I was a little bit surprised with this experiment is that, well, we start our investigation with a question and we design experiments, try to be as fair as possible, but we have some hunch what you're looking for, right? I was actually expecting for a negative result here. And well, I found a positive result and which is great, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
Do you plan to repeat this with different models and different data sets just to verify that this is a general phenomenon?
I don't know. Do you think it'll be interesting?
I mean, it would at least give additional evidence to the idea that this, you know, the sparse autoencoders are actually learning a sparse monosemantic representation across different sort of models that have similar characteristics.
I did not say anything about monosemantic yet. Oh. Yet. So I still have some doubts.
Okay.
But I am just telling that, okay, what is the representation being learned?
Hmm.
Okay.
So I like the setup. So, you know, there's this fundamental question that's underneath all interpretability methods.
Yeah.
Which is, are you... is your method, especially all these methods that have a lot of training,
yeah,
right? So are you learning, are you revealing something that the model already knows? Mm-hmm. Or are you learning something new mm-hmm. that the model didn't know? And you know, you're just developing some new model to solve some new problem that might be unrelated to the underlying thing that you're trying to study, right? And so especially if you spend, you know, thousands of dollars of electricity training something, you mm-hmm. start to worry that maybe you're, you know, like creating some new thing instead of studying the old thing. And so here you created the new thing, you know, with two different pieces of data.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up being kind of the same, right? Mm-hmm. Which suggests that like the task that you set out to train these SAEs on,
mm-hmm.
You know, you couldn't really get the SAEs to do something different by changing the task a lot.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That they were like stable. They were like giving you a window into the model, even if you're training them very differently.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. This is very interesting, actually. Yeah. And yeah, that is kind of why I was a little bit surprised. And yeah. Yeah. So people actually. Yeah. Sure.
Very good. So what is your explanation for why the alignment or the similarity drops for the top one and the bottom one?
Because when so I made sure to initialize all the essays like similarly, like this is basically a linear, a random linear projection, and this is steps or this is trained on one k steps, so the models is still kind of random. You can literally see that they are kind of the same, right? So my explanation why it starts dropping is that this is kind of equivalent to what the model has, what the language model has actually learned. This is kind of equivalent to taking the embedding, treating the last token or treating basically the average of the document as the embedding of the document. And this has not really learned anything. But as the essay starts learning, they start learning characteristics of the data set. But then they start going up because they are again like this is kind of like a generalization phenomenon. Like they start learning characteristics of the model.
This is fine. This is I'm asking about the top and the bottom one.
Oh, the top and the bottom one.
The data set is same in those cases. The model is different.
The model is different. Yeah. They are learning, they're trying to like become different
representation
of different representation based on the model.
Okay.
What layer is you comparing here?
So for both of them, I take the eighth layer, which is exactly at the middle. They have 16 layers. Both of these models.
Yeah. I'm wondering why you're switching between model experiments at the top and the bottom are going down. If you think that in the first phase, especially in the first phase, it's mostly picking up on data specific properties.
This kind of depends on what the model has actually learned, right? If the model has learned different concepts, you are going to end up with different kinds of mixtures.
Although,
does that make sense? This is kind of my hacky reasoning.
Now these are both natural language models.
Yeah.
So it would have been.
Yeah.
You might expect this to go further down if one of them was like a code LM or something like that.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes. But yes, because the concepts in the code space will be something completely different, maybe. But I guess even in the data mixture for language models, there is a substantial amount of code.
Sure.
Often.
Sure, but you'd expect like the balance, the number of features are to be very different in balance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a bit naive to this, but if you had two models that were trained for different tasks, but they end up somewhat aligned, would that mean that you could possibly use one sort of in a transfer learning sense for the other task? Or like if the models were trained to do different things, but they end up having sort of a very close distance, if they're very aligned, would it be okay, or would it they perform similarly on each other's tasks?
I don't know. Like there has been a weird line of work which I'm not really following, the models teaching type of work, which tries to learn or connect between representations of different models with affine transformations.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to look at them a little, but I don't have a good answer for you.
Okay.
Sorry for saying that weird. I mean, this is my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
you look into that and find that
it feels like a blue sky sort of situation of like, hey, this is very interesting results. What could this possibly
be? Yeah.
Mm. It's okay for you to call it weird. It's weird and cool.
It's very cool. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I what I'm trying to show is this slide is that I start with kind of similar initializations for the autoencoders, and they kind of start at the same thing. But as I train them more, like kernel space for the models, this starts looking similar. These are for different data. This is for the same model, but for different data set. And this is for the for different model, but for the same data set. And you can see that the kernel space starts looking similar for the model, which I was trying to show it with the
score. How does this visualization work?
I literally just visualize the kernel.
Of you know, with what on the x-axis and what on the y-axis?
Both document indices.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So so this is, how many documents do you have on the...
Okay, I had 8,000 documents.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, if you just project 8,000, you don't really see anything. So I'm selecting the top 1,000.
Oh, that's what I'm understanding.
Yeah.
Okay, and so... so each scalar value is that score that you had before?
Cosine similarity.
Oh, it's just cosine similarity,
yeah,
between the SAE representations?
Between the SAE representations of the documents. Okay. Did you have a question?
Yeah. Why is it that, this may be a stupid question, why does the cosine similarity of these two representations mean that they're like similar semantically?
Like if you basically try to see if the model is trying to cluster things with the same feature, I guess.
What if they learn the same, like, couldn't you have two SAEs that both learn the same kernel, but they're rotated versions of each other? So you learn kernel X, run it through some rotation matrix, and then wouldn't the cosine similarity?
No. Why? Because when you
finish your question so that everybody understands, please.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, sure.
So you still learn the same neighborhood relationships, or at least close to the same neighborhood.
Even if you rotate, it should be the same kernel.
Right. If you rotate it, it should be the same kernel. But if you take cosine similarity between the first kernel and the second kernel, then they won't be similar.
Okay. I'm not taking the they will be similar. Because here, each of these representations, they are actually cosine similarity of the same SAE basis, right? So if it has learned the same concepts, it will cluster same documents as high cosine similarity. Even that actually stands even if the kernel is rotated for the other setting, for the other SAE. Does that make sense?
Are we talking about cosine similarity for each entry or comparing the kernels?
Yeah, I thought you were comparing the kernels here.
Yeah, we are comparing kernels, but how we get the kernel is each of the cells in this kernel is a cosine similarity between two different documents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that
make sense? Okay, so we're just visualizing the kernels then. We're not visualizing the cosine similarity between pairs of...
This is the kernel.
That's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
So you have model one. You have SAE1, it learns kernel 1. You have SAE2, it learns kernel 2.
Yeah.
You have document 1 in the first thing and document 1 in the second thing. Right? Yeah. Is this the cosine similarity between document 1 in the first thing and document 1 in the second thing?
No.
Document 1 and 1 in the
document in the first 1 thing? And 2 in the first thing?
Oh,
document
okay. 1 and yeah, 2 so in I the thought I thing. Thought it was between the two kernels, not between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably should have spent some time on the setting to explain that a little bit more.
I see.
But does that make sense to everyone now? Yeah. Thank you for this question.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible that they're clustering them the same, but for different reasons.
But for so many documents,
it'd be unlikely. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So. So this experiment is clear to everyone, right? Okay. Cool.
And so on the right, let's see.
Hmm.
So these are the four. These are the four that you trained.
Yeah.
And you can see this the clear invariance to the data.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can see very similar banding patterns.
In the same model.
I'm not sure if I understand this comparison because each column or each row in your kernel corresponds to a document from your data set, right?
No. In my kernel, each of the cells correspond to two different documents.
But each column corresponds to one.
Sorry.
So the individual documents are just different.
But it's the same 2,000 documents.
Evaluation set is the same.
That's right.
Sorry, what?
So the matrix on the right uses 2,000 documents, matrix on the left uses the same 2,000 documents. Where did you draw your 2,000 documents from? Are they from Wikipedia or from StackChoice?
There's some completely different data sets.
Movie reviews.
Yeah.
So you evaluate the Wikipedia and the Tiny Stories essays on the same data set, the movie reviews.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Shall I move on?
So do you think that they should have done this as a maths project? Do you think this is interesting enough?
That's a great stop.
Because Neil's feedback was, this is not interesting as a maths project.
Wait, I think it's very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah. That's what I think. I think it's a great setup.
Maybe he wants to go write his own.
What is
his thing?
He wants to write himself.
This is getting more clear. You saw him, he goes, what if I do some Fourier stuff?
25.
Okay. I'll keep working on this, man. You will do it.
One of the reasons I actually presented this work is to get this feedback.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you guys think this is interesting?
So there's a couple questions I would have. So back up to your graph. So it's like, does this keep on going down lower? You stop at 2 million, whatever iterations.
200 million. Yeah.
Oh, 200 million.
200, sorry. Yeah, 200 million. Documents.
Things are so expensive to train.
Now we don't have access to the case cluster. We're gonna lose access after.
Oh, what? They extend?
It is November now.
They extend. Oh, like first of December.
Hey, Jaden. We're safe for another. couple weeks.
They reduce the restrictions. I'm running jobs there now. It's weird, but it works.
Yeah. So they had some weird restrictions. Only 20. So at some time in like a couple of weeks ago, only 220 nodes were operational.
Yeah.
I mean, and there was
this is like the thing that's killing the case cluster is these SAEs. Like everybody wants to train these things, right? Like
that is true.
If we just did regular inference-based interpretability learning, there'd be plenty of GPU for everybody.
Yeah.
Instead, everybody wants to be training these things. And then you have these advisors like me saying, what happens if you train more than
I'm one of the persons to blame here. Yeah, because I was training a lot of SAEs and a lot of different data sets. Yeah.
So you didn't save more checkpoints in this.
More checkpoints, but another really time-consuming thing is to get these representations also.
But it's just 8,000.
Well,
you don't have to do 8 because you only graphed 2.
But sorry, what? Oh, yeah, I only graphed 2, but I'm.
And your SPCCA, you could do it on 2. I mean, you can see visually.
2,000?
Yeah,
no, so this score I'm presented here is based on 8,000, 8,000.
No, but you could do it based on 2 and it'd probably be the same number, right?
Probably, yeah.
And be 4 times cheaper.
What if they compare these representations like between pairs of kernels? Because I don't think you could do this cosine similarity thing anymore.
No,
but like what some stuff that I've seen uses like a neighborhood similarity trick where
MNN, mutual neighborhood.
Where like you look at each point and you look at which points are in its k-nearest neighbors.
Yeah.
And then you look at how similar you look at the union over.
Yeah, I actually already have that implemented. That. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
And I also looked at the scores, but I did not present them here.
And it's consistent with this story.
Yeah, it is consistent with this story. Yeah.
That's nice. Hey.
Maybe SAEs work after all.
Yeah, people probably know what they're doing actually. Yeah.
Maybe they didn't, and now you're giving them the right fundament.
Okay.
Someone had a question?
I had a question.
Who? Sure.
So, like, we are using SAEs to learn the concepts that each of the layers learn, right?
Yes.
And that's also, cool. Like, do a monosemantic analysis, like, if there are monosemanticity in each of the layers.
I did not talk about monosemanticity yet. No.
The question is, we do all of this analysis using SAEs. So, if we have one model, and we are confident that SAEs are learning what we think it is learning, then we take a model, and it's a generative model, and we create an artificial data set from that model, and we use the data to train this exact same model, and then we perform this analysis, then we perform another set of SAEs on that new model that is trained on the data that has been generated by the first model.
Mm-hmm.
Do we expect the same features to be learned and the same directions to be in the SAEs?
What's your setup again? So you have two different models trained on the same data?
We have the architecture is the same. There is one model. There is the first model trained on data set A. And we train SAEs, learn the directions and features. And then we use the model A to generate artificial data. We give some context and expect some.
So you want to distill the model into another model.
We expect the same features to be in both of the models?
My hunch would be
My hunch is I think this is a reasonable research question. So distillation is known to be really effective at allowing you to shrink the model parameters in a way that just continuing training with the existing model parameters cannot. And so that would suggest that distillation leads to different solutions that are not accessible.
But here he's not suggesting distillation. It's literally the same structure. It is not really reduced, not a smaller model.
So there is like one GPT, for example. One GPT that is
trained. But you start with a random initialized one for the second go, right?
Yeah. So that is not trained. The second model is not trained.
I guess in distillation, you want the student model to be often smaller than the bigger model.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter, but like either way, if you train on like distilled data, like it can be smaller, and which suggests that the distillation training is different. It can lead to different solutions. At least that's what the literature suggests to me.
Probably like learning a representation from the input and actually generating the output are two different tasks. And here you are only learning the representation from what other model has generated. Yeah.
If your model A has really understood the concepts, then it should generate.
Right. But I haven't seen any interpretability research on this setting.
Okay.
I think that would be an interesting one to study. Right. Yeah.
Or maybe even how far you could generalize, like if you could do this over and over and over again, see how far you could distill.
Exactly. So that was the limit. So I was about to go there. So yeah, that was the limit. If the model collapses. So that's my ultimate question. If like eventually, if we just train on and on with artificial data over and over again, would the model collapse and fail to recognize any of the features that was learned in the first model?
You should read JB Grill 2020, Bootstrap Your Own Latent, which uses this procedure. And they have, you know, guidelines on how to make it work well.
Bootstrapping Your Own Latent?
Bootstrap Your Own Latent 2020.
Yeah, should I go on? It's 11:04.
Oh, yeah.
What should I do?
Go on. Have more snacks. It'll take a snack break.
Okay, nice. Okay, so this is another question. Well, why do we care about SAEs? Well, the promise of SAEs is to actually break the representation space into monosemantic and interpretable neurons. Does it actually do that? Is L1 sparsity loss enough to basically break in interpretability? And basically, another way of asking this question is, are SAEs the right unit for feature analysis? Okay. So there is a line of work investigating this. One is feature splitting. So there are here like two scenarios for the mixtures. Let's say it has learned one direction for something like a feature starts with A, and it has learned two directions. Starts with A without the word avocado and only activate for avocado. Which one of these settings do you think sparsity will favor? The second setting, right? Because it will allow you to get to a reduced sparsity.
More zeros.
More zeros, literally. So this is called feature splitting. Sometimes we want the features to split. Basically starts with an L. Okay,
Why was the second setting better? When you said second setting, you mean when we activate.
It's not clear that it's better though, right?
It is not better, but this is something sparsity laws will actually favor.
It's more sparse. It's not necessarily better from a performance perspective.
But I still don't understand why it would be more, why the right thing would be more sparse.
Because you're like, it's the same sparsity.
Yeah.
Right. Because for both avocado and A, you have a single neuron.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So isn't that the same sparsity?
This is just like a single variable, but as soon as you have multiple variables like red ball and then green ball and green square or whatever, then he has a slide for that.
Yeah. That's what I had, like feature entanglement, even in this setting.
So on the left thing, say you get a bunch of data, a bunch of A words, and 1% of the things start with A. So then, let's say like everything else is always zero. There's no other features in the universe.
Okay.
So then 1% of the time that thing will be 0, 0, 1, and then the rest zeros.
Hmm.
And so now let's say of that 1%, half of them are avocados and the other half are other A words. Hmm. So then in that case, you'll still have the 1% thing on the left. So that's, and then on the right, 0.5% of the time you'll have 0, 0, 1, and then the rest zeros, and another 0.5% of the time you'll have a 1 in that purple thing, right? So
yeah, I understand the argument you're making.
Adding it up, it's still the same L1.
You kind of end up with the same L1.
Yeah, but going to a different setting, we have red and green balls and red and green squares, then you could like imagine learning a feature separately for like the square property.
Well, you can go to the next slide here. So let's you can talk through this one if you like.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember when I put the slide what I was thinking.
So if they're mutually exclusive, then it's the same sparsity, right?
If they're mutually exclusive, then it is kind of the same sparsity. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, but if you had like just started the day, you got rid of the without avocado, and then also another one that only activates on avocado.
But then
the left would have better
sparsity. Yeah, then this is what you want.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
Because then the one on the right would sometimes have two ones in it instead of single one.
Maybe forget about the sparsity loss, but this is something that has been known to happen when you scale the SAE dimensions. Basically, and sometimes it splits in human interpretable directions, like starts with an L, starts with an uppercase L and starts with a lowercase L. There has been some works training SAEs on SAE latents and something like it kind of like splits, but sometimes often it does not really, it just kind of like splits randomly. It does not really it does not really split in some interpretable direction. That's kind of like a problem.
I see. So you would count starts with an L with exceptions is not very interpretable, like your avocado example.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that will be a bad example. Yeah. of like, feature splitting.
I mean, that happens.
That happens.
But it's undesirable.
I actually don't know. I mean,
I think it's undesirable. Like, if you go to a kindergartner and you say, these are words that start with L, but not laser.
But the thing is that, the sparsity loss, I'm just trying to make an argument here, is the sparsity loss enough to basically bake in these human interpretable directions? Basically, and the sparsity loss, it has no reason to...
So what if instead of the avocado thing, it was the color red, and then on the other side, it was like a bunch of different things for each like type of red? Like, right, that's more what I imagine feature splitting to be, where you have some general thing, but then, you know, when you have more space for a representation.
Yeah.
The incentive to like have this splitting is... Feature splitting is mostly observed when training autoencoders with different widths or number of latents.
Yeah.
So you can retain better reconstruction, you can get better reconstruction loss. If you have like a decoder vector that's only corresponding to like one very specific setting, maybe starting from like all words to A and like just points to the general A cluster. But then if you have enough latents to encode all these like individual notions, then you just have better reconstruction loss. So I guess that's the main reason why you see feature splitting arise with like different SAE widths.
You are also working with a benchmark, I know that, right? Are you guys also investigating this? Like, do you have a score for this? I mean, if I just give you two SAEs, can you just give me a score, like which one is
better? So feature splitting is like a very subjective thing of like, I want to have the avocados as separate, but what's the right level of granularity? You can imagine that it, like, it's very basic and then it's like interpretable and then it's too like narrow concepts. So what we do is like coming up with a list of concepts that we would like to find encoded in a single latent, and that should be like the right level of granularity. And then we just probe, or we check whether we find individual latents that correspond to concepts we came up with.
Can you give me a score? Like
F1 score, using the SAE non-zero activations for a specific setting.
I'm asking this question. It'll come a little bit later.
Amazing.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Okay, this is the question Ken already kind of told. You can also think of like feature entanglement. Like, let's say you have four different things. You have blue circles, blue squares, red circle, and red squares. So the thing on the right, thing on the left is kind of like desirable. The model learns different concepts for different directions for different things. But the thing on the right is not desirable. Well, first of all, this is not atomic or reductible. But the sparsity loss will actually favor the right one, right? Because now if you have a blue circle, now it has to turn on this neuron here and this neuron here, but now it can get away by turning just one neuron. But this is not really what you want. Okay.
But a 2x2 is a little bit of a degenerate case.
Yeah, you can.
As soon as you have 3x3,
yeah.
Then
yeah. You have now, an advantage. Now you have an advantage to do it like this.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, people have looked into this in like actual trained SAEs, and they found this to happen.
I see.
Yeah. So one solution to address this is that you proposed it, but I had a different way of putting it here. So trying to, So in some sense, this SAE are kind of similar to how you process audio signals with FFTs. So FFTs are supposed to give you like this spectral components in the frequency domain, and that is what you kind of wish what SAEs are doing, like breaking a representation into its individual concept components, right? And
signal separation.
Sorry, what?
Oh, I was just talking to myself. It's signal separation, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So FFTs has these really nice properties. It is kind of linear. Yeah. So can we just incorporate this?
Wait, sorry, does it also have the the scaling property? It has the f of t of a1 plus a2 is f of t of a1 plus f of t of a2. But if you scale...
It is linear, yeah.
Okay.
It has the scaling property
as well.
It has
the scaling one too.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you can just add it with this kind of loss. Like, add is just another term in the loss function, right? I already implemented it. That's why I was asking you these questions. I already have the SAEs with this loss added.
Trained with this loss.
Yeah, trained with just another loss term, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Compositionality loss.
I call it entanglement. Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. Completely shared with this. Yeah.
So this is you want to minimize the distance between the thing on the left and the thing on the right,
yes.
Basically.
Yes. Just assuming that if you just take two random documents. Mm-hmm. From your data set, they'll be very different and will have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
So you kind of like do this. Oh, I'm also not adding another thing. Sorry. So another disentanglement loss I make sure is that they're also orthogonal. This is a part of the loss. This is not the whole thing. Yeah. Does that make sense? What is the second thing I do?
No.
Okay. This is one thing I do. And I also make sure that SAE encoder.
What actual metric? What are you minimizing here?
So
the MSE between.
I'm minimizing two things. One thing is the MSE between left and right.
Mm-hmm.
I also make sure that this representation and this representation, they're orthogonal.
If you and H1 and H2 are drawn how?
Randomly.
So if you have two random documents,
yeah.
They should tend to be orthogonal.
Yes.
But if you add the thing, they should tend to be the same.
Yes.
I see.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Someone. Okay.
So yeah, I had another question from these blocks.
So
it's half of a contrastive loss. So like, so you've got this classical contrastive representation learning regime, and the thing that you're missing is if you have two unrelated documents, they should be
different
orthogonal.
Yeah.
Right. This is a nice thing. But then if you have two different things that are supposed to be related, then they should be more similar. So for example, if you have the first half and the second half of the same document or something like that, then they should be more similar. Right. And then that would be a classic like contrastive loss.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. And also another thing, it might not be. Okay. So it goes back to one of the questions.
Like if you submitted to NeurIPS or something, then your reviewer will ask, well, what happened to that term?
Yeah.
Right.
And if I was the reviewer, I'll ask another question.
Okay.
So there are some concepts you kind of expect to be present. Let's say there is an English feature.
Sure.
Like two documents, they should have the English feature. And I am actually penalizing against capturing that as well with this construct. Contrastive loss.
Right, but if you have the other term, it might neutralize that, right? So the
there is a tension between different losses, which you hopefully compensate for each other.
Yes.
I'm unsure about how you get from the frequency premise to the simple like additivity of those hidden representations. Could you walk me through that once more?
Which one?
You're motivated by really having the frequency of like two representations, A1 and A2, where A1 and A2 are single SAE latents. Is that correct?
These are actually properties of FFT. So A1 and A2, these are just simple audio signals.
Mm-hmm.
And FFT of A1 is basically... basically the modes of that signal.
That's it.
Right?
So when mapping that to the SAE domain, we would
concepts.
We would treat A1 and A2 as hopefully concepts, but like the thing we're measuring are activations of individual latents, right?
No, A1 and A2 are actually equivalent to the representations. FFT of A1 is actually equivalent to the M1 and M2. I'm actually just realizing that I am changing the notation here. I should not have done that. Yeah, basically this is...
So your fast Fourier transform will be like the analogy of like my SAE in the first place. Okay.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Probably. Okay.
This is a very interesting idea, and I got the high pushback from colleagues that they say, okay, adding two like very different representation, H1 and H2.
Because I asked him to evaluate this also,
What happened?
And they were like adding representations, there will be so many interferences.
Yeah.
So we can't really trust this hidden representations like added together.
But that's what the FFT is for, is to separate all the signals.
But I guess that's all you can just verify, right? I mean we can just see which one works better. That's what this whole SAE or this whole machine learning literature is, I guess. Sometimes principal thing don't really work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes random thing just ends up working.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So you have something else to evaluate.
Can I just give you two SAEs, trained on the same model on the same data set, one without this loss, one with this loss, and you'll just tell me, give me a score or something.
So the thing that I looked into was two SAEs trained on different architectures with different hyperparameters.
Yeah.
That both don't know about this loss, but if we evaluate on this property, mm-hmm. does one do better than the other? Mm-hmm. And it does show big differences, like top K voice.
Better in terms of what?
In terms of
disentanglement.
Yeah, the compositionality.
Yeah.
In terms of
just want to make sure
so
what better is in this context.
To be specific, I'm looking at precision recall of the features that we get when encoding the sum of both representations and the union of features or latent activations that we get from encoding both individual representations.
Yeah, I mentioned this loss mainly deals with the union of representation and seeing sort of the splitting.
So I actually did not encode the other part of that loss as well, but it has the loss has basically two terms. One is this, and the other is just checks for orthogonality. Okay. Basically, the intersection, basically the multiplication of those two should be zero.
Yeah, and seeing how close to zero it is. Yeah. Effectively.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you have any of your own evaluations of this?
Not yet.
Do you have any of your own by hand inspection of it?
Oh, I was not expecting this slide. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, have you looked at them? Do they avoid splitting and things like that?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet. So this is kind of very fresh. And I finished training the SAEs like yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't know if you have L with exceptions.
I was just being a little bit lazy. I just thought that I'll just give Ken this to represent to SAEs and he will take care of this. He'll just give me a score and go wild.
Yeah. Yeah, John's like, okay, bring it on. Okay.
Great. Yeah.
Okay, so with this loss, you do not include the sparsity one, right? The L1, no?
Everything is still there. Oh, it's just another additional term. Yeah.
Oh. You disincentivize entanglement to try to get towards monosemanticity, right?
That's the hope.
Okay.
That's the hope, yeah.
I guess just practically, how do you have any idea how to weight that to do the loss terms?
Oh.
Sorry, what?
How do you know how to adjust this hyperparameter to actual loss term?
How do I adjust that?
Like you have a bunch of different loss terms. Like how do you weight each one?
You just look at these raw values, just for different training steps, and then you try to adjust the coefficient so that It's not a good answer.
That's
what
I figured. You're just looking at individual.
Yeah, all the I don't think there is a good answer for any kind of hyperparametric tuning that you do. You just do it.
The question was, what do I want from my SAE? Do I want it to like be a perfect reconstructor about my initial like input? Then you have this reconstruction loss. Yeah. You have sparsity. You have something more like, you have like an LLM looking at the features, interpreting each one, and then giving like an interpretability score or something.
You can probably also do something like linear scheduling. Like you can also linear schedule on the hyperparameters basically. First, you try to minimize the reconstruction loss for a while, and then once it has achieved a good reconstruction loss, you kind of switch to the other two. Maybe. I mean,
you'll find out.
Sorry, what?
You'll find out when you go about.
Yeah, that's one of my question was that, do I want to find out? Like, if you. Like, is this question interesting enough? I mean,
what is research if not finding out? What is research if not finding out?
I guess there are multiple interesting directions.
Oh.
And you are only human.
You only have so much time and so much effort. That's fair.
You have limited amount of bandwidth, I guess. Okay. Yeah. Should I actually stop here? I mean, the other stuffs are actually a little bit different, and I think it's 11:30 almost.
We can. How does everybody feel? Should we wrap up? Or do you want to hear more? No, John is like, no, I want to stay.
We can talk later.
So why don't we say this? So like, people who have other things to do, we can stand up and walk around, and if people want to hear more of what is going on with Arnab, can hang out here. But yeah, let's all stand up, take a little walk break, and then if you want to talk to Moy, you can come back in a couple minutes. And great.
Is there anyone else coming?
Yeah, Aaron is coming.
Today?
Oh, Aaron Regular? No, not Aaron. Aaron Maloff.
I'm just going to
ask. Is it actually
Aaron,
good?
Aaron Maloff.
Yeah.
Oh, we do? Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I guess better walk around.
12, right?
Yeah, 12.
Just half an hour. So, David.
Yes.
Would you be running with first Aaron, like right after their talk? Like, you have that as
a meeting. I'm happy to do that.
Okay, cool. If I start to ask questions,
I'm
not afraid of looking or acting
It's not that.
It's just clear. David, didn't you say that I should speak to somebody who is
coming into the thought? That came up my
I don't remember.
Yeah. You like added me in the end.
The only reason I know any of this
the Tom
I had a lot of this.
He was giving a talk in the next few weeks.
No, like I'm able to understand it.
Not a talk. Dimension. Was it Tom?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'd have to.
I'm able to understand it at a very high level.
He's pretty senior, old researcher.
Okay.
One of the fathers of AI.
Great.
It doesn't matter.
As in, like, what would be the main application of this?
No, how would they, like, actually construct it like this?
Oh.
It doesn't matter. So that's the big what I would be constantly asking.
Yeah.
I can end with all my answer.
So this claim that SAEs are more model based than not data set based, I'm not sure about.
Well, it's only in this particular instance.
So that's right. So I think the main thing about that study is he's done it on like one pair.
I feel like
if you really want to do a paper, you want to do it on like
a bunch of different models. Yeah, that's
something like that, and try to stress it as much as you can.
I guess the thing is, like, if you were to train with a very different data set, like a code data set, you would learn completely different features than like some other.
That's the hope, right? And then the SAE should pick it up. Like he took two different data sets to train his SAEs on, and Wikipedia and poetry or something like this. And he thought, those are different enough.
you know, maybe he should make the data sets he's trained in essays on even more different. Like one is Wikipedia and the other one's code.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would that be more convincing if like the data sets he trained the SAEs on were like as different as, you know, code?
Or make the models very different. Like look at the first layer versus the eighth layer. Like it seems like a methodology thing.
There's an interesting amount of work where they try to train specialized SAEs by like taking specific data sets. So like one which is only biology related, one which is like only code related.
Let me stop the recording.
And they do find that there are many more like actually biology related features in the SAE. So